Hello, and welcome to our legitimate business, Legends of Philadelphia. These are your hosts, Tony Two Times Trove, and his schoolyard chum, Johnny Cement Sandals Zito. I'm Waste Management Rep Brian Bierman. You might be wondering, why does cannoli taste better when it's taken from a dead man? Well, in addition to being Philadelphia natives, Zito and Trove have a lifestyle brand, South Fellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes. Lots of times, customers will ask us, are you a cop? Because legally you have to tell me. Or they want to know if we took care of that thing. So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, so we're hoping to share that with you. One day I'm going to memorize it, and I'm not going to need to read it.
That'll be really
impressive. One day we'll get a teleprompter. Now that we're...
We need a cue card guy.
Oh.
An intern
to just like flip the card so you can be like flip
faster
flip too fast.
I just want to point out
we're the same pants.
I'm just gonna call attention to it.
I was like I'll save that for the end. Corduroy.
No, stop, you're gonna start a fire. Yeah. What are you guys doing?
And I know I told you where to get these. This boutique called Amazon. I know they're from there. That's who I want to shout. I want to shout out this week. Amazon, this upstart company.
Great book selection.
Oh man, they're doing great things for the world. Also, I have Crumb Bum socks like Zito's.
I'm wearing Crumb Bum socks as well. So we both match a little bit with beer.
Wardrobe provided by South Fellini and Amazon.
Yeah. People are going to come in and be like, do you have those corduroy pants? Sorry.
Can we screen print on corduroy? Maybe we will. Maybe we'll start carrying them. So this episode is about feuding DJs and whether or not they may or may not have put a hit on one another in feuding for territory.
This was like rap beefs before.
And this isn't Howard Stern versus John DiBella.
Yeah, these guys were around way, way before. So in 1995, the New Jersey State Commission on Investigation issued a report saying that Jerry Blavitt, the self-proclaimed geeter with a heater, once asked mobsters to kill his friend and rival DJ, High Lit. The revelations rocked the Philadelphia broadcast community, dividing loyalties and forcing industry professionals to choose sides. The Lord scandal culminated in a face-to-face meeting where High Lit confronted Jerry Blavitt about the deadly allegations on live television.
Wow.
And that's everyone in Philadelphia was like tuned in.
It was a big deal that week. Mm-hmm. It was July 3rd. It was right before the 4th of July. Welcome,
we're
America.
Everyone at the shore.
We're not going down the shore. Well, I gotta watch this. Like, we gotta get involved with us.
What do you think the vibe at Memories was like that weekend?
It was probably pretty tense.
There was like the Geeter people were sitting over here, and the High Lit people were over there. It was like the Sharks and the Jets.
Bunch of boozy boomers.
What does geeter with the heater mean?
I looked it up. It means alligator with a heater, and he swears that means like a space heater, but a heater is like a slang for a gun.
The gun.
Yeah. So I always thought it was an old guy with a gun, because a geeter is like
he's saying it's like a geezer. I'm an alligator in front of a space heater. That's what he's trying to be like. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Why is that? What's that got to do with anything?
Well, you can give yourself your own nicknames.
But why that, though? Why is... You're a cold alligator?
Well, he's also, like, the boss with the hot sauce. Like, yeah, he's like giving himself these, like, rhyming nicknames,
yeah,
you know?
It needs to rhyme. He was like, I don't know. It's like rhymes with geeter.
Like, the Zito with the Cheetos, you know? It's like...
When I was real little, they would still play, like, doo-wop and 50s music on 98.1.
Isn't it just soul crushing that the oldies 98 station plays music from the 90s?
They were playing Avril Lavigne.
They were playing The Strokes.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
the oldies circuit featuring The Hive.
Like, oh, Skater Boy, I remember this song.
I swear to God, I thought about Avril Lavigne today because I put a T-shirt on over top of a long John.
Like that.
I was like, well, what, breaking out that Avril Lavigne early Y2K. I swear.
Yeah, you do like Avril Lavigne today.
I got a whole Skater Boy thing going on.
It's complicated.
You do like a Skater Boy. How do you spell that anyway?
With an eight and an I.
These are the
because he doesn't really dress like this. He usually wears
suits and ties.
He dresses like the what was her name? Trenchcoat Mafia or whatever. He has all is a black leather duster.
I'm usually a Matrix guy.
He's in a lot of
buckles, a lot of leather,
a lot of straps.
Those aren't the sunglasses he typically wears.
It's Matrix or like S&M.
These are the kind of visual gags that you only get from watching on YouTube.
If you're listening, you don't know what color pants we're wearing. We're both wearing. You got to watch the video now.
When was the first time you guys became aware of Jerry Blavitt or High Lit, the oldies scene in general?
Well, I remember listening to like Oldies 98. I always loved the oldies since I was a little kid. And I was like, Dad, why does this guy talk over all the songs? And he was like,
yeah.
Look, son, that's Jerry Blavitt. He's been doing this since 1961.
It's his
style. That's just how he does it. And I'm like, but all he does is just like says everyone's name and it's like, it makes people feel special and that's why they love him. But I want to hear the tunes.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear this guy talking it over it or singing about it.
They always talk like right before they're
right before. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, you know when the music, the song's coming in. The words are coming in. Cool. And I always liked High Lit. He played like the really old songs. He always played like the doo-wop songs. Like, I thought that was cool.
High Lit, I like didn't really know. Like,
he's
I
like knew, so old. Yeah. Like, I feel.
Like, Jerry Blavitt, I knew. And like, you know. I think we talked about it before, but he would be biking around and stuff. Like he would see him around the city.
He put up a mural up on Broad Street of like himself. All the oldies. We put up like all these like oldies acts, and then he like himself
but
in the middle.
He's the biggest one. He didn't make any of this music.
DJ, you hit play. Yeah. Like, come on.
You talked over these
all these other
songs.
People have musical abilities.
Hyman Litt was born to Sam and Mona Litt on May 20th, 1934. He grew up in South Philly at 5th and Rittner before eventually moving out to Osage Avenue. He got started in the business in 1955, fresh out of the University of Miami.
He had to be like the only kid from South Philly to go to University of Miami.
I think it might be the University of Miami in Ohio. I think it might be like
the... Well, he has to be the only kid from South Philly to go to Ohio.
It's like, oh, I'm going to school in Miami. Miami, Ohio.
Is he from Philadelphia, Mississippi? Or...
There's a Philadelphia, Ohio, too.
This explains a lot.
Litt dominated AM radio in Philadelphia for the next decade as one of WIBG's good guys, and his Hall of Fame show drew 71 market share unheard of before or since. In 1956, Litt married his first wife, Miriam, who was, in fact, Miss Philadelphia at the time.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
High Litt was on top of the world.
A power couple.
Power couple.
That is a power couple. That's especially for the 1950s. That's like as Americana as you can get.
Poodle skirts and
Cadillacs.
Yeah, and
doo-wop DJs. The whole thing.
Speed, getting speed from the drugstore. Just all that.
You know,
50s
stuff.
Yeah.
It said that in the 1960s, Heisky's voice, as the teenagers referred to him, drew three-quarters of the listening audience, many in defiance of their parents' direct orders to shut that music off and go to bed.
Turn off that devil music! It's like, the song's about holding hands.
Litt flourished in radio and brought huge acts to Philadelphia like Elvis and the Beatles.
No big deal.
NBD. So in a way, High Litt actually invited the British invasion that
he welcomed
out,
it. Yeah, he welcomed
that
it.
That wiped out the Fabians and the Bobby Rydells.
So it's his fault.
It's yeah.
He hoisted his own petard.
Sorry, Frankie Avalon. Take a seat.
In the late 60s, Litt hosted the nationally syndicated High Litt Show from WKBS-TV in Philadelphia, which aired in more than 30 markets nationwide. Guests on the weekly hour-long show included such musical acts as The Fifth Dimension, The Monkees, The Four Tops, and Marvin Gaye.
Nice. I was trying to look up like High Litt stuff, and it's like none of this like exists.
A lot of that stuff got taped over. We talked about it when we covered Captain Noah, but it's hard to find a lot of his stuff before 1985 because the old film tape-to-film system was just about.
They probably were like not even crap. Recording audio.
Some
like,
of it went live too.
Yeah, it was just live stuff. So
no one wants this crap. Just tape over it.
Jerry Blavitt was born July 3rd, 1940, and also grew up in South Philadelphia. His father was a bookmaker, and his mother worked at the Philadelphia Navy Yard during World War II.
Like he makes books?
Like he was a gambling bookmaker. Like he took bets.
Like
a bookie.
Like a bookie.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds like South Philly.
Yeah. He came from a mixed background, Jewish and Italian Catholic, so he kind of had his feet in both worlds. and
the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Just both sides, you know, both sides of the neighborhood. I guess what I'm trying to say is he seemed like a kid who wanted everyone to like him right from the get-go.
Yeah. He's like, I'm an alligator.
Like, sure, I'm an alligator with a gun.
In 1953, Blavitt debuted on the original Bandstand with Bob Horn and Lee Stewart. He was on Bandstand before it was cool, literally.
So wow. This before Dick Clark was on Bandstand?
Yeah, this is when it was a local. So we never covered American Bandstand on the show, but in speaking about it.
That was another one that was always on there.
Well, this is like so old. This is like people our age are not going to be like, oh, let me check in to hear about the Geeter.
Yeah, I love this.
I love this.
American Bandstand was a local program that got so popular that the national syndicate stepped in and was like, "We'll take care of this. We'll take it from
we
here.
We got this." And it needs more dick, quite frankly. That's what they said.
In 1956, Blavitt managed a national tour for Danny and the Juniors, and he worked as Don Rickles' valet from 58 to 59. What kind of mean shit do you think that Don Rickles said to Jerry Blavitt?
Go get my car. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, yeah, I got to hear this again.
He probably took so much of that act to just, like, you don't drive Don Rickles around.
Why, yes, Mr. Rickles, I am half Jewish. Let me hear about this again.
Let's hear.
I love this. Can't get enough of it. I love it. Don Rickles is great.
Yeah, yeah.
He really is. But that seems like a thankless job. I mean, maybe he wasn't like doing that, but
I imagine Don Rickles is Don Rickles 24 hours a day. He's always on.
Yeah.
There's no stopping him.
Yes, yes. He called me a hockey puck. I got it.
I get it. And Danny and Juniors, I think they were from South Philly as well. I remember the juniors were playing like bocce ball with my parents over Guerin.
Recently.
Danny was banned.
I think Danny overdosed or committed suicide or something. I don't know if we can say that on YouTube.
Did they replace him with a different Danny?
I think they just started appearing as the juniors.
As the juniors.
Yeah. They did Let's Go to the Hop. So you know their song.
I know their song.
There's a hit, you know.
From 1965 to 1967, Blavitt produced and hosted a weekly television show in Philadelphia called The Dysphonic Scene, a dance show along the lines of American Bandstand,
Dysphonic Scene.
It sounds like Dystopian Scene.
This is definitely the 60s now. It's just like, everything's like, oh, it's like a scene. It's like weird.
Yeah, it's groovy.
He's giving these names, but they're not great.
But if you just repeat it enough, then...
But you're talking about it.
We're talking about it.
You're talking about it.
Sure.
The Dysphonic Scene was a dance show along the lines of American Bandstand. Referring to himself as the Geeter with the heater and the big boss with the hot sauce, Blavitt acted as host. So I guess he just saw the American Bandstand formula and he was like, I'm just going to ape this.
I can do this. I got this.
Well, I would say... You know, oh, he's just copying it. But there's been so many television dance shows forever.
It's a formula, yeah.
Yeah, they're not around.
The Grind.
And he's like, the Grind. Jerry Blavitt's The Grind.
The Grind.
At spring break.
Jerry, you know,
he would have gone if they would have invited him. He definitely would have gone.
The Grind was on MTV when we were kids. And... They would go to different cities. And I remember they did the Grind at like Pat's and Gino's. And I don't know if it was really there, but it was just like green screen, the backdrop. But I've been looking for this forever and I cannot find it on the internet. But I know this existed. Maybe any viewers?
Anybody that has taped
every episode of
The Grind?
I'm sure there's somebody.
If anyone who taped all the episodes of The Grind, I don't get in touch.
It's like a group of people in front of Pat's and Gino's. Like, I got the power. It's like, I need to find this footage, man. Someone better have this.
I wouldn't mind seeing it.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
No, I want to see it, but you know, there's a price you pay.
Is it on archive.org? They have a lot of crap.
You know, I didn't look there, but maybe
we'll find it.
We'll find it.
We found the
Steve Carlton's meditation room.
Yes, which was you go back in our archives, but that we a thing we were looking for, and Zito found it accidentally.
Secret rooms of the vet. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But he stumbled upon it, so we'll find it. We'll get to the bottom.
It'll pop up. We do this long enough. All the dirt rises to the top. Jerry was a popular personality and guest starred on television shows, including The Mod Squad, The Monkees, The Tonight Show, and The Joey Bishop Show.
These are big shows.
Yeah,
the
this Monkees. Is decent appearances, yeah. Seems like he had a relationship with
for him. For a local DJ being that, like, he was that popular that he, like, showed up on all these other things.
Yeah.
He's on The Monkees, like, show?
Yeah, and they were on his show.
Yeah, but, like, he's a live show. I think the Monkees had him on there, like...
Oh, yeah. I don't know what he was doing, if he was, like, playing the bad guy of that episode. Or
he probably played it himself-ish.
I was going to say, he probably spins a Monkees record in the show.
And Joey Bishop, forgotten Rat Pack member.
Yeah, always like Joey Bishop. Funny
that's
guy.
That's where Regis Philbin got his start.
On the Joey Bishop
show? Young Regis Philbin. Wake your kids up. And bring. They don't want to hear about this. If you're listening to this. They want to hear about Regis Philbin's starts.
Regis Philbin. Joey Bishop. The unfamous member of the Rat Pack.
Yeah, the other guy.
Well, what about Peter Lorre?
What about Peter Lorre?
He's way less famous.
I don't even know who that is. He had to clean up after that. When they left the bar, and it was like, you left trash all over. And they're like, you know, Frank Sinatra's out picking up after himself.
Peter will get it.
Someone has to do it.
In 1972, Blavatt purchased a nightclub in Margate, New Jersey, and named it Memories, where he would DJ regularly.
And it's still,
himself.
Like, that's like a place, like, stuck in time. Yeah. Like, it was there. It was like an oldies club in the 70s, and it's still an oldies club now. And it was called Memories. Like,
yeah, that's weird. I kind of want to go.
It sounds like the kind of place that Stephen King would write a book about.
The devil lives here.
The people who are watching this episode are people who go to Memories, so we cannot talk too much trash on Memories.
I just meant it's like The Shining, you know.
I just mean like The Shining. It's like a ghost party at the end of The Shining.
I just meant it's haunted. I didn't mean anything by it.
Now, Jerry always played the music that he wanted to. He didn't follow the approved list of artists or records that the radio stations had programmed. Quote, playing music from the heart, not from a research chart, end quote.
Damn, he had a rhyme for everything. That's why no wonder it's
got famous. I know what that meant.
Yeah, that's another part of the...
Sorry, we'll get to that.
He claimed this was part of his personal style, developed in front of live crowds at the dance clubs, but other disc jockeys like High Lit, who did follow the rules, didn't appreciate Jerry's free spirit.
So High Lit was playing what he was supposed to play?
Yeah, he was playing what he was being told to play to stay on the air. He was given playlists and, you know, his
job. High Lit's boss was like, this is what you play. And Jerry Blatt was like, I'm not going to play that. I'm going to play what I want to play.
If you're listening on audio, he did the money.
The money hand symbol. The money hand gesture.
You can't hit. Wait, do it in the mic.
It's called payola, and there was a crackdown on it.
So that was like, was that around this time, or was this after this? Well, where the payola scandals of like...
The payola scandal started all the way back in the late 50s. It's part of a wider crackdown on television and TV show contests.
Well, I mean, there's still payola.
Like
they just like I didn't give you money. I just bought you a car.
Yeah.
I didn't...
There's all...
you know, it's...
And there's all kinds of legal ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you buy somebody like a trip or something.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, it's my friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Clarence Thomas. Right there.
I just gave you a money sandwich.
Yeah,
I mean,
a sandwich full of money.
Gold sandwich, yeah.
According to You Only Rock Once, Jerry's autobiography, Lit accused Blavatt.
What would your autobiography be called?
You Only Roll Once.
You Only Roll Once.
Lit accused Blavatt of being on the take for record promoters, an allegation that could have destroyed the Geeters' career.
Because this was like a big deal at the time. Like they were cracking down on this.
Yeah, you could get in trouble with the government and then lose your job because the government has the license, provides the license to the radio station.
You're not playing the doo-wop you're supposed to be playing. We got to crack down on this.
This guy keeps playing Danny and the Juniors.
Yeah.
When are you going to play the...
when are you going to play the Mickey's Monkey?
Mickey's Monkey.
Litt made his accusations, but the Geiter denied it, and there was no proof. Not even after Jerry had broken the records by newcomers Frankie Valli, the Isley Brothers, and Dionne Warwick that their own labels didn't think were worthy of release. He went on to claim that Grateful Record execs wanted to give him a royalty share on these hits, a reward Dick Clark regularly indulged.
So he would get royalties because he was like, I made this song popular.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
And Blavitt swore he only ever did it for the bragging rights, and he never received any kind of royalties or points.
I believe it.
Yeah, out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah.
It's crazy that years ago, and I mean, I do believe that, you know, DJs could just break your, like, break you into the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we even say, what was it, 94 YSP used to break artists, you know?
Like, yeah.
Because, like, if you play a song on the radio, even you only got to play it once. Then people are calling, like, yo, what was that song?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like,
a different time.
Then, like, people, like, you know, radio was so popular back then that it was like, man, that, like, yeah, it would actually, like, cause it to be popular or whatever.
Yeah, you could blow up from one play on the radio.
There's only so many radio stations, and this is, like, a big market, and it's...
Yeah, especially in a place like Philadelphia, which services a bunch of states and cities...
And every station had their own, like, audience, so if you, like, yeah, it's amazing that years ago and a DJ had that power.
Yeah.
I can see this is why they're egomaniacs.
It's possible that Jerry didn't forgive or forget this slight so easily. In 1995, the New Jersey State Commission on Investigation issued a report saying that Jerry Blavitt asked mob boss Nicodemo Scarfo to kill High Litt on at least two occasions.
Two.
He asked twice.
He was like, hey, I know I don't want to make this weird, but I asked before about that thing.
Like, I know you're like a mob guy and you're doing like all kind of like, you know, your little legal scams.
You're busy.
But like, how about you kill my rival DJ who's my friend?
Yeah, he's my friend.
Why don't you just like kill him? I know we're both oldies DJs and so irrelevant these days.
So he asked him to kill him in 95, though?
No, in 95, a report came out.
Oh, it came out in 95.
It came out in 95, but it was...
In 95, there was like, there's literally not room for both of us. One of us has to go. There's only so many oldies.
I play the Supremes. He plays the Supremes. Yeah, I mean, come on. Come on.
Listen, they want me to play grunge music, okay? They're breathing down my neck.
Do you know what a Pearl Jam is?
I can't deal with this.
Jerry Blavitt's flannel stage. Yeah.
Horrible music.
Temple of the Dog? What kind of band name is that?
There's no bop. There's no bop
There's
to this.
No...
I can't swing to this. You can't make out in the back of a Cadillac with
I can't sharpen these fingers to this.
So this report came out in 1995. According to the state of New Jersey, Blavitt thought that Litt was cutting in on his business and wanted him rubbed out. Scarfo told Jerry that he was crazy and that he wouldn't do it. So Jerry requested that Scarfo have High Litt roughed up a little bit instead.
Give me the
just send him a message.
Give me the less. Give me the lesser version.
Yeah. Come
on. You don't have to kill him. Just like I just smacked him around a little bit.
Just break a tooth.
Break his. Come on. Well,
like this mobster was like, that's a little low for me.
We're a little bit more legitimate than that.
I love the idea that like maybe Scarfo was like, actually, I'm a High Litt fan.
He's like,
you talk over all the records.
You talk over all the songs. I just don't like it.
Sorry,
I want to hear the tune.
Scarfo told Blavitt that he'd think about it, but it was a soft no.
A soft no. I like this. He's a mobster, but he's like, I also have boundaries. Like, my therapist told me that I need to have boundaries.
High Litt claims to have heard these rumors that his life was in danger around 1984. He was warned to get out ahead of the potential hit by contacting anyone in the criminal underworld who might have a line to Scarfo or his crew.
So he'd go kill him first, basically. Preemptive, a hit. A preemptive rub out.
I'll pay you twice as much. But High Litt had no connections, and after a few weeks, nothing happened. The rumors died down, so High Litt dismissed it. Figured it must, you know, just be
it's
nonsense.
Bunk.
We gotta move on with his life, you know.
Well, he was real careful for a few weeks, and then he went back to his normal life.
He got Bob Charger to start his car those couple of weeks. It's That's cold out. Can he go?
After that, Hylett and Jerry Blavitt actually became friends in the 80s and 90s as the oldies scene started to shrink around them. But when the New Jersey Commission published their report, it made huge headlines and confirmed that there was something to the murder plot after all.
Bam.
Scary stuff.
That's messed up because they were friends at this point.
Yeah, at some point, Hylett...
Well, they were friends and they were enemies and they were friends again. And
then you find out your friend tried to kill you in the 80s.
You didn't try and kill me, did you?
No.
Sir,
I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. Two times I did.
Only two times.
Two times that people know about.
Yeah. And this is one mobster. We don't know about the other.
Who knows about the other? Yeah.
I just don't get how there could be that much competition, like to feel that competitive against someone else who's playing just the same. Temptation
Only
music.
I play the Dell Vikings.
I
there's not enough room in this malt shop for both of us.
Malt.
The week after the report was released on July 3rd, 1995, Blavitt sat face-to-face with Hylett for an interview on 6 ABC's AM Philadelphia with Wally Kennedy. Jerry asked Hylett to his face if he believed the accusations. Hylett admitted that he didn't want to believe that it was true, but in 1984, he took the threats seriously.
Man.
It's Jerry Blavitt was like, you don't believe that, do you? You don't believe it? Come on. Like, he's like aggressive about being like forgiven or.
Say I didn't kill you.
I'll kill you if you don't say I didn't want to kill you.
Yeah, he tried to bully his
way.
He's
trying to bully the guy, yeah.
Yeah,
like further making me believe that it is
bully
true.
Him into feeling safe.
Jerry Blavitt repeatedly proclaimed his innocence, insisting that his supposed connections to organized crime were gross exaggerations. Jerry was friends with all sorts of people. Frank Rizzo, Cardinal Kroll, Walter Annenberg. Real stand-up folks.
How can I be friends with that guy if I'm friends with this guy?
Cardinal Kroll, Catholic Church. They never did anything wrong.
Cardinal Kroll. You expect somebody to be friends with a mobster and priest? Come on.
That's ridiculous. But the host of the show wasn't buying it. Wally continually chides Jerry for being a crony and a hanger-on.
A crony?
Yeah.
Well, like a mob wannabe. They're the worst.
They're still around.
Wally is going for his throat. He wants him to
admit
something.
That's crazy, too, because he's like just the host. Yeah. He's not like high lich.
He's like, I'll have you killed so quickly.
Don't you know who I am?
I feel like Wally thought that he could maybe get Jerry to admit a little something or lean into it by calling him a hanger-on or calling him a crony. He'd be like, what? I'm the biggest. I ordered the murder of Angelo Bruno. You know, like, I killed the chicken man.
I killed the chicken man.
Like, I thought he. He thought he was going to have like a Matlock moment or something.
Mm. Oh, man. So then it gets juicier, huh?
It does, in fact, get juicier. The second half of the segment, former Philadelphia homicide detective Frank Friel joins the program, and he all but calls Jerry a liar to his face. he says, Jerry, that's not true, insinuating that Jerry used his associations with Scarfo to intimidate and impress across his career.
Yeah. He's like, I know mob bosses.
Yeah. But Jerry refuted that interpretation and said that these associations caused him more trouble than any benefit he might have received. In fact, Jerry believed much of the report was fabricated by a former mob associate who was banned from Jerry's club memories for not paying his bar tab.
So he's like, I don't associate with these people, except for this guy who used to come to my bar. Yeah.
But I had to kick him out because
he didn't pay.
And he was trying to get on. He's trying to get under. Jerry's trying to get under Wally's skin in the interview. Then trying to be like, Wally, you know people. You've met people. You don't ask everybody what they do for a living, do you? And Wally's like, I'm a reporter. Yes, I do. It's my job to ask people what they do.
What they do. I'm asking you.
And Jerry's like, well, I'm a DJ.
Yeah, I just wear this Kangol hat backwards. Okay.
This was before his Kangol phase. But he was still dressed in a very tight suit.
It's crazy that people just kind of like kind of got over all of it or didn't really care.
Yeah, they're
or
like,
people liked it about him, you know?
Who is this?
That's true too. A lot of people did like it about him. They take
yeah, they were like, yo, that's cool. He's in the mob. Like I want to be.
They took calls on the show and nobody could believe it. Nobody believed that Jerry was capable of these things.
Not, well, he's not like who's really intimidated by Jerry Blavitt? You know what I mean? Like.
Well, the geeter with a heater? I heard
he's an alligator with a gun.
That sounds scary, actually.
So I guess this is why people weren't really afraid. I mean, I guess this is why he also was looking for someone to do the work for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he don't want to get his claws dirty.
His alligator hands.
Jerry handled himself pretty well on the show, never losing his cool, but that slick approach did border on slimy a few times. At one point, Jerry opines, quote, I've been in the business for 35 years, end quote. And Kennedy interrupts, quote, the record business or the mob business? It's clear that Jerry's legacy is on the line in this interview. If Hylett chooses not to believe him on live TV, memories might be all that Jerry has left.
Wow.
Good,
figuratively
good pun,
and literally.
Good pun, yeah. Good wow. pun. That's like when people just like, okay, you've been doing it for that many years. So it's.
Yeah. Yeah, what does that mean? You've been getting away with it for that long.
I met the Coasters, okay? Yakety Yak was about me.
I do get the impression there is like, I mean, like I said, Jerry's being slick, but I do get the impression that Jerry feels his career is on the line in the interview.
It's also probably like,
why did he even agree to do it?
Because he was trying to rescue himself. I'm sure he had a bunch of like gigs and his club on the line. Are people going to come to his club if they think it's unsafe?
I could get shot up at this this place.
You might put a hit out on me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. If he's willing to kill his friend over over
and,
this
I mean,
over
like,
ratings.
Let's say it happened, right? Hylett gets killed, and it's like, well, who was his? Who benefits from him getting killed? You know,
I feel like he's the number one suspect.
Yeah. It's like, oh well, it's this guy.
Right. So if anything ever happened to Hylett for the rest of his life, everyone's
he's,
Jerry.
Yeah. Exactly.
After leaving the broadcast, Hylett embraced Jerry warmly and decided to believe his friend after all, agreeing to leave the past in the past. As the veteran DJs did promotional interviews for the evening news, they made light of the whole situation. Cameras captured them leaving the studio arm in arm, reminiscing about old times. They even shared a kiss on the cheek.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was real sweet. They made up.
The kiss of death.
I knew it was you, Fredo. I knew it was you, Jerry.
I mean, you've been holding a grudge against me for eating your M&Ms. And... I'm just saying.
You'll never see it coming. You should take all of the threats I make on your life seriously.
Do you think Hylett really didn't believe it, or he was just like...
I had no choice.
Yeah, like, if I say, I don't want to get killed, so...
Yeah, he just had to be like, no, of course, Jerry, you're a good guy.
It's totally cool. It's totally cool.
No, it's fine. Who hasn't threatened to have somebody murdered by the mob?
Hylett was diagnosed with Parkinson's in the late 90s, and he died November 17th, 2007 at Paoli Memorial Hospital of kidney failure. He was 73. So he made it to a ripe old age without getting whacked.
I mean, that's all you can ask for.
God bless him.
That's all you can ask for in life, to not get whacked.
Mm-hmm.
He made it. If there was a hit on his life, he survived the contract. Blavitt died in hospice at Methodist Hospital in South Philadelphia following complications from neuromuscular disease on January 20th, 2023 at the age of 82.
Yeah, he was very, like, just always around. Like, he would just...
Love or hate him, he definitely is influential.
Yeah, and he would be, like, on TV and stuff all the time. It was just, like, it was always... And even when he died, it was, like, you know, they showed his funeral on TV.
They
like,
flew the flags at half mast.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
not a joke. They did that.
Like, it was such a big, it was a, like a, you know.
And I just kept going, really? Really? The guy from Locod Connie wrote a song about him. I was like, really?
Do you guys believe the story? Do you think that Jerry Blavitt went to Scarfo's house and said, whack my friend?
Absolutely. I bet, but I imagine they're probably like having drinks. He's like, you know, it'd be really, you should just like kill Hylett. Yeah. Like, I think it was probably like that as opposed to like.
It was lighthearted. It was
like
giving
him like a note or like it was Scarfo's daughter's wedding day. You know, like I don't think it was like that. I think it was probably just like. like while they were hanging out.
Yeah. Listen, I might have said
like when I'm like, yo, you should kill Bierman.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be mad about
it. Mad. I was just we were having roast beef sandwiches. I don't know.
I was all on roast beef.
I was high on roast beef. I was high on the juice.
I 100% believe this as well. I worked for an oldies radio DJ for a while. His name was RJ Disco Forever. And he had quite a few feuds going on. And I'm sure people
wanted
him dead.
Well, it's a small scene, right? Yeah. So they all hate each other.
Yeah.
I remember once him and Bob Charger actually getting in a really bad fight. And
you had to break it up.
I was like, whoa, guys, come on. You've been friends forever. And RJ shouted back at Bob Charger, I helped you bury your dog.
And I can't believe Jerry Blavitt had that guy's dog killed. That's what's messed up. That's just, like, crazy.
Okay, that's pretty much all there is to know about the dark side of local DJ feuds. Please check out our website, www.southlania.com, for cool, inspired Philly merch. Visit us at 1507 East Patchunk Avenue in beautiful South Philadelphia. Check us out on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also on Patreon, at South Fellini everywhere. Follow along and join in the conversation. We want to hear from you. Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, and see you later, boy.
Why do we got to wash our hands?
See you later, boy. You don't have to wash your hands anymore.
You should still wash your hands.
No.
No.